Okay, as 2020 comes to a close, we are doing a number of year-in-review conversations. Yesterday, we did the year in social media, for example. Well, we had originally thought we'd do a year in medicine, too, but it didn't take us long to realize that the year in medicine has really been about one thing.
I am issuing the following emergency order. Effective Tuesday, March 24th, all non-essential businesses shall close their physical workplaces and facilities.
The CDC is advising the use of non-medical cloth face covering as an additional voluntary public health measure. So it's voluntary. You don't have to do it. They suggest it for a period of time. But this is voluntary. I don't think I'm going to be doing it.
This is going to be basically a way of life. Okay? There's no ifs, no ands, no buts, no doubts, okay? You're going to be expected to wear a face covering or a mask.
Supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light, and I think you said that hasn't been checked, but you're going to test it.
I stand here as someone who has had confirmed orders for millions of pieces of gear evaporate in front of us. And I can't tell you how frustrating it is.
I came here, wasn't feeling so well. I feel much better now. We're working hard to get me all the way back. I have to be back.
As a vaccine, it's more than 90% effective, which is extraordinary and will play a major role in what the outcome of this is going to be.
On the first day I'm inaugurated to say I'm going to ask the public for 100 days to mask. Just 100 days. To mask, not forever, 100 days.
This is not just the worst public health event. This is the worst event that this country will face, not just from a public health side.
So there you heard Governor Charlie Baker, President Trump, Anthony Fauci, Joe Biden, Deborah Birx. And now news just today that Governor Baker is again restricting capacity on indoor and outdoor gatherings. You know, the year's pandemic events are almost too much to take in. You hear all of that sound, how much has changed, but we're going to try, and we want to take your calls. We want you to do it with us. What did you learn about medicine and healthcare in this year of the pandemic? What do you think we're going to face in 2021? You know, are you ending the year heartbroken, hopeful, both? And what outstanding coronavirus questions do you have? We have two doctors here with us today. They can help answer them. So our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. As I said, we've got a great team of folks to help us make sense of all this year. First up is WBUR Common Health Editor Carrie Goldberg. Hey there, Carrie.
Hey there, Tiziana.
Also with us, Dr. Helen Boucher, Chief of Infectious Diseases at Tufts Medical Center and a professor at the Tufts University School of Medicine, and Dr. Cassandra Pierre, Infectious Disease Physician and the Associate Hospital Epidemiologist at Boston Medical Center, also an Assistant Professor of Medicine at Boston University at the School of Medicine. Welcome to both of you.
Great
to
be
here. Thanks so much, Tiziana.
It's great to have you. You know, we've all been on this journey on air together so many times this year. I have the same opening question for all three of you. I'm going to turn it to Carrie first. Carrie, as a veteran journalist and healthcare reporter, with 2020 gratefully almost in the rearview mirror, how would you write the headline for the pandemic?
Well, I guess if I were putting together the front page of 2020, it would just be the word pandemic in great big block letters, like in 36-point typeface, about the size of like the Men Walk on Moon headline from 1969, mm-hmm. or even bigger because the moon is, you know, a couple hundred thousand miles away, while this pandemic affected all of us so directly. And then more on an emotional level, you can't put this in a headline, but for me, this year has been bookended by these two feelings of, oh my God. Like first, in the early spring, it was, oh my God, we are going down. This is the big one that the infectious disease Cassandras have been warning about for years. And now it's really happening. And then just in the last couple, 3 months, it's been sort of the good kind of disbelief, as in, oh my God, I can't believe these vaccines are actually this safe and effective. Because I must say, Tiziana, if there's one thing that reporting on health and science for nearly 20 years has taught me, it's that biology is a bear, let's say a bear, and she will break your heart almost every time. And I honestly never expected the vaccine outcomes to be this good this fast. And so in short, it's just been an oh my God year all around.
That is a fantastic summary. It really resonates with me. So let me turn to Drs. Pierre and Boucher. I'm going to ask you the same question. About, you know, Carrie just gave you her OMGs. Dr. Pierre, what's your headline?
I don't want to be too flippant, and it certainly hasn't necessarily been an even year, but I would say my headline would be, put your trust in science. This has been a year we haven't known who to trust, where to get our information from. We've seen misinformation targeted towards those of us or communities that are most vulnerable and most in need of accurate information. And the truth has been exploited and undermined in so many countless ways. But science has, for the most part, come through for us. It's just figuring out where to get that information from. So that would be my headline, and I share Carrie's amazement in the fact that these vaccines are here and that they performed so well. I was giddy when I read the New England Journal of Medicine article detailing the results of the Pfizer trial. I promised my patients that I would look at all of the data, make sure that everything that I saw or recommended came from a fact-based, science-based perspective, and I felt relieved that I could endorse the vaccine wholeheartedly, mm-hmm. the vaccines, I should say, wholeheartedly. So science, above all other things, has come through this year, and it's just figuring out where to get the truth from. That's been the trouble.
Dr. Boucher, let me just put the number out. 800-423-8255 as our listeners start queuing up both your comments and your questions on the coronavirus as we review the year in the pandemic. How about you, Dr. Boucher? We've heard two different headlines here. What would yours be?
Yeah, well, I certainly agree with Carrie and Cassandra. And I think what I would add to that is a note about preparedness. You know, we in infectious diseases have been working on being prepared for an event like this for many years, but clearly, we as a country were not prepared, whether it be for the space, the stuff, the PPE, the people, the workforce, and that has cost us dearly. I think the other area for which we were not adequately prepared was in communication. And while the source of truth was a question, I think we all could have done better. We in the medical community could have done better in communication. And I think that I'm hopeful about the vaccine, and I'm hopeful that we're speaking with a more united and clear voice about what we all need to do now to get through these next 8 to 12, what are likely to be dark weeks.
Carrie, before I go to the phones, you know, I enjoy these years in review. I enjoy talking to the guests. I enjoy coming up with the themes, but I also know that we have to take a minute right up front here to count the toll as well. People have lost loved ones, friends. Can you put it in perspective? How deep has the toll been here in the Commonwealth and for the nation?
Yeah, I mean, sticking to the Commonwealth, it's just been excruciating. And I want to keep this short because I know we've been putting out a kind of a very demoralizing daily drumbeat of these numbers. But at this point, where we're at is nearly 12,000 Massachusetts residents have died of COVID-19. About two-thirds of them were in nursing homes and other long-term care. We've currently got nearly 2,000 people in the hospital with COVID. And I feel like in the media, we haven't even been able to begin to do justice to the loss and the grieving that has happened. And I think that's something that we'll be facing in 2021. On the slightly more positive side, it's kind of amazing to me. One other number I want to throw out there is that just here in Massachusetts, we've run over 10 million tests. And while you could certainly find a lot of fault in our testing regime, it is quite an impressive number. So all in all, you run out of words. Like, it's been cataclysmic. It's been monumental. It's been unprecedented. It's just, it's been a pandemic.
Let's start working in some listeners here too. We've got 800-423-8255. We have Dave on the line from West Roxbury. Dave, go ahead.
Hi. First on the vaccine, I hope that they put on the state's dashboard the number of people who are vaccinated each day. I'm just nervous that not that I want to want medical people to get the vaccine, but why aren't we vaccinating the people who are getting sick and dying? Which leads me to my question. When will we know that this is working? When will we start to see deaths drop, not number of cases because it's still going to spread, but hospitalizations, from the vaccine. When will I be able to go into a bar or Red Sox game? And when can I have students back in my classroom full-time without masks, without hybrids, since it hasn't been since March 12th? So when will all those things happen, in your guys' opinions?
Dave, thank you for that.
And I can start on that one. Yep.
Go ahead, Carrie.
Just, we know the state has said that it will start putting out its vaccine dashboard this Thursday.
Good.
So we will at least start seeing the numbers of people vaccinated. And I think there will be categories also, but I'm not sure exactly what they would be. And I will leave our physicians to take the harder question about when we can have a normal life again.
Yeah, so there were two parts to the rest of what Dave asked, and I think we all heard kind of the frustration and urgency in Dave's voice. Part one, Dr. Boucher, I'll turn to you, which is, when's this going to be better? Let me give you that part of Dave's question.
Yeah, well, it's a really good question, and the honest answer is we don't totally know. What we expect is that the first signs that we're making progress will be when we start to see deaths slow down. But we believe that we need to get to 70 to 80% immunity by vaccine to reach what we call herd immunity, to the point where the virus will stop spreading and where we can start to let our guard down. In the meantime, we have to do all those mitigation measures that we know work, like masking and maintaining our distance.
And Dr. Pierre, so what Dave, the second part of what Dave is asking, and we will get more into this, is, you know, about prioritization in the vaccines. But I really want to use that as a springboard to back us up a little further and ask you a first part of that equity and access question, because we are doing a review of the year in the pandemic. And I remember vividly in the spring, early spring, late winter, as we began to understand the disproportionate impact that this pandemic was having on people who were already vulnerable and already marginalized. And I wonder if you can take us back to when that realization was forming and how we processed it, what it meant, and how you think we've handled it over these last months.
Yeah, this has been a year for revealing, this COVID has clarified so many different things, and one of them has been the fault lines of disparity that we work and live, practice medicine within. So back in April, I believe, we were starting to see there was a lot of advocacy for disaggregating the data regarding race, ethnicity, and COVID-related infections, hospitalizations, and deaths. And we started seeing simultaneously in the cities that were beginning to show this information, this data, in addition to the CDC, that, as many public health experts could have told you, people from Black and Brown communities were disproportionately at risk and dying from this disease. There was obviously more information and focus on this through the summer and the spring and the time of outcry and outpouring of people marching on the streets in response to the George Floyd murder, and tying those intersections of marginalization in society to marginalizations in medicine. And we've unfortunately continued to see those disparities to this time. So clearly, a vaccination strategy that is going to be effective is going to be targeted towards not just prioritizing those who have higher risks of infection because of where they work, where they live, their underlying medical conditions. Many of those things place Black and Brown communities at risk, but also communicating it to Black and Brown communities who have also been disproportionately targeted for the misinformation I mentioned earlier.
So before I go back to the callers, 800-423-8255 to join our callers. Carrie Goldberg, we've just heard references. You made one. Dr. Pierre made some other references to how the state has been reporting data over this year. And that has been a big part of the arc of this pandemic, is collecting, reporting, and increasing the transparency of data. How have we done?
How have we done? I don't really feel like it's my place to give the state a report card. There were definitely improvements that were made over the months. We're still missing a few pieces. For example, it's difficult to find out if you have a relative in a nursing home or another congregate care setting. It can be very difficult to find out whether there's an outbreak and exactly how many people have gotten infected. And actually, I would just add to Dave's question, if part of that was going at the issue of age being the biggest risk factor of all, the average age of the people who die of COVID in Massachusetts is 81. We do expect the vaccinations to start in nursing homes and other long-term care facilities this Monday. So, in fact, there will be, in the very first wave of vaccines, there will be those people who are at the very greatest risk of dying from COVID-19. So that's kind of a first step. But otherwise on data, I think, you know, it's a work in progress, but there is a great deal of data that the state puts out about who's getting infected, how many tests, and so on. And there are state dashboards you can look at if you're a data person.
Thanks for that, Carrie. Let's grab one more question before we go to break. 800-423-8255. We've got Mike on the line from Lynn. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, I was calling. It seems like they're not really prioritizing the people in nursing homes, that they're going to have other populations. And also, we've known that old people in nursing homes are the ones who are dying, but they haven't reduced the number of deaths in nursing homes. I mean, it seems like it's still 67% across the board. And I'm also concerned, too, about, you know, if you have to take two doses. So if they send out a bunch of vaccine, are they waiting for that? Are they holding that vaccine for that person to get the second shot, or are they just hoping that it comes when it comes?
That's a good question. Thanks for that, Mike. And, you know, Dr. Boucher, I do believe that people living in all ranges of congregant care actually are in phase one of the vaccine rollout. Mike is asking, you know, are we sure that's happening? And are we holding that second dose, or are we distributing everything in dose one and then 3 or 4 weeks later when it's time for dose two, do we have to hope we have more inventory in?
Yeah, so great questions. And I can just confirm that people who live in congregate settings and long-term care facilities like nursing homes are in group 1A along with frontline healthcare workers. So they are at the top of the priority list. And as it was mentioned earlier, they're going to start being vaccinated here in the next few days here in Massachusetts. So that's good news. In terms of the supply, I believe that the plan, the whole manufacturing plan, I know the details more on the Pfizer side, was that they are releasing the doses in a staged way. So they have guaranteed that the second dose will come. So we are using the doses that we have with the understanding that the second doses will follow. I haven't heard the same level of detail yet about the Moderna shipment plans, but I know that's the plan for Pfizer.
WBUR Common Health Editor Carrie Goldberg, Dr. Helen Boucher, who is Chief of Infectious Diseases at Tufts Medical Center, and Dr. Cassandra Pierre, Infectious Disease Physician and the Associate Hospital Epidemiologist at Boston Medical Center. We're continuing to take your calls, both your lingering coronavirus and vaccine questions and your reflections on the year and the pandemic that has been 2020. So that number is 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Doctors Pierre and Boucher and Carrie Goldberg, if you don't mind, the phones are just lighting up. I'm going to jump right in with a call. We've got Stephanie on the line from Franklin. Stephanie, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm just curious as to what level of protection the vaccine will afford people at home that cannot get the vaccine. I have a 7-month-old son with a history of ITP. He's been high risk this whole time since he was born in June, and I'll be getting the vaccine as soon as I can, as will my husband. So I'm hoping to find out if that'll help a little bit for him at home.
So Dr. Cassandra Pierre, it's like the echo effect of the vaccine. If one person in a household is vaccinated, how does that affect or help the other members of the household?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's the same question my husband has, because I'm a healthcare worker and his baby is vaccinated. So I think what we know so far is that these vaccines have great efficacy for the individual who's taking them. So currently 95% efficacy in terms of protecting symptoms. We don't know what any effect they have on asymptomatic infection or transmission of infection. So that is information we are still awaiting, information that is yet to be gathered but will. Until that time, we recommend, as Dr. Boucher mentioned, people continue to wear masks, continue to physically distance. We know that if the healthcare workers are getting vaccinated in this first phase, that reduces their risk of bringing infection home with them from the hospitals or healthcare settings or the world. But it doesn't necessarily mean that we cannot get asymptomatic infection. And so we need to continue to practice our infection prevention strategies until we can ensure that at least, you know, in this case, the adults in the household can be vaccinated. And it's going to be a little while before the world returns to normal, and that means we need to continue to protect each other, even if our individual risk drops because we ourselves have been vaccinated.
Okay, thank you for that. I want to pick up Becca, who's on the line in Needham. Becca, hang on just a second. I just want to note that we have at least one other caller with the same question as Becca, so hopefully we can answer for a couple of people here. Becca, go ahead.
Hi, I am a healthcare worker and I received my first dose of the vaccine on Friday. I am so grateful. It was earlier than I expected. My question is, we know that it might protect you against getting infected with the virus, but when and how can we be sure whether it actually prevents you from spreading the virus as if you were an asymptomatic carrier?
Good question. Dr. Boucher, can I turn to you on that one?
Absolutely. And so as Dr. Pierre mentioned, the way these vaccines were studied is in studies looking at preventing disease, sickness with COVID-19. We're still waiting the data to talk about actual infection and transmission of infection. It is being studied and we'll have a little information, but it's going to be several months before we have that data. So in the meantime, we have to act as if we could, those of us who are lucky enough to be vaccinated still could spread the virus. So we need to mask up, maintain our distance, wash our hands, avoid crowds, and stay home when we're sick, unless and until we learn differently, and likely until 70 to 80% of us have been successfully vaccinated.
So Carrie Goldberg, I want to turn to you again for a minute, because we're not only answering listeners' questions in the moment, but we are reviewing this year in the pandemic, and you've done a number of these listener call-ins with us over the months, and there have been so many other outlets by which we are now seeing people able to ask healthcare providers urgent and immediate questions about how to behave, what their options are, et cetera. Have you, as a healthcare reporter, seen something substantially different in the dialogue between private individuals and the public health and healthcare communities this year than you've seen before in your reporting?
Oh, what an interesting question. What I have felt most of all is that healthcare reporters are basically just translators and amplifiers of what the public health officials who really know what they're talking about tell people. And it has often felt to me like there was a gap between what people needed to know and the messaging that was going out. And I don't want to cast any blame. I think a big piece of it was that one of the great takeaways here is that public health has been just incredibly underfunded for a very long time. And I think that departments of public health and even the CDC didn't always have the human power to be able to do as much communicating as they needed to do. And what we've seen is a lot of amazing physicians like Dr. Boucher and Dr. Pierre stepping up and stepping out when it is not their natural job to have to come on shows like this, and they're doing it anyway. And I just want to express my appreciation, because God knows I don't know the answers to a lot of the things people are asking.
Hear, hear, Carrie. It really has been remarkable the way healthcare professionals like you, Dr. Pierre and Dr. Boucher, have really engaged with the public. Has that, Dr. Pierre, been a really rewarding part of this for you, an uncomfortable part? How have you felt about that?
It has been a little awkward. I'm used to talking to my patients face-to-face, and not only do I now have to use telecommunication to have our visits, but they say, I heard you talking about masks on this show, and I liked what you had to say. So it has been rewarding in that way, absolutely. And I've also tried to use it as a way to talk about vaccines, because I can't see everyone at once. But it is a little uncomfortable. We are used to dealing with in the world of the hospital and the world of patients. But this has given us an opportunity to talk about public health messaging on a larger scale, which is always helpful when there seems to be a vacuum of information and guidance coming from other sectors that we traditionally look to for leadership.
So, Dr. Boucher, let's fill a little more of that vacuum. I'm going to paraphrase questions from callers Frank and Judith. Frank is 83 and not in congregate care and wants to know where he fits in the vaccine priority list. And Judith is 77 and has heard that Moderna's vaccine may be less optimal for older adults than the Pfizer vaccine. So let's go in reverse order. Any truth to the difference between the two available vaccines for older adults? And where do healthy older adults who are not living in congregate care fit into the vaccine distribution strategy?
Yeah, so great question. So the first one is we don't have any evidence that either vaccine is better or worse for older people. They're both effective in older people and people at risk. And that's the good news. I think it's we have to be careful when we look at numbers, and there's so many numbers from these studies, not to get carried away in what we call a subgroup analysis, that wasn't really the question asked. My take on the data is that they're both effective in older people. So that's good. The second part is, where do people over the age of 75 in this case fit? And it's interesting. They probably fit in either phase 1B or phase 2, and it depends on a couple of things. One is whether or not there are other risk factors, and the other is whether the state of Massachusetts decides to change their phasing based on the CDC's recommendations from this past Sunday. So there's still a little bit of what we call a moving target here. I think the good news is both are relatively soon, and it's very much recognized that age is a risk factor, and we want to get to people in that older age group as soon as we can.
All right, I'm going to turn us to looking ahead now. So we're going to say goodbye to the remaining callers we weren't able to get to today. Thank you for calling in. We will continue to do these opportunities for you to call and get your questions answered. So do continue to listen. We will do this for you again. I want to look ahead, and Carrie Goldberg, I'll come to you first. In your reporting and the conversations you're having, I know how annoying it is to be talking about potentially another pandemic when we're still in this one. But we do try to be learning people and a learning organization. So are we learning lessons from this pandemic that may better prepare us for another that could come down the line?
Well, I certainly hope so, yes. And I think one of my biggest predictions for 2021 is that as this pandemic hopefully fades, we are going to see sort of a massive, actually a literal postmortem, as we look back at all the things that we did wrong and figure out how we can do things better. And it will be such a big analysis that it will really dwarf what we did after 9/11. Like, clearly we have fallen down as a country and actually globally. And I really look forward to seeing all of the conclusions that are drawn and the changes that are made to make sure this never happens again.
And Dr. Cassandra Pierre, what is something that we will do better in healthcare writ large as a result of having found our way through this pandemic?
I believe that we are going to be taking a better look at health disparities, whether it be a pandemic or chronic medical diseases. I think this pandemic has already spurred many institutions to look inward and evaluate their own health outcomes based on demographic characteristics, including race, gender, and other factors as well. We know we have many vulnerable populations who have disparate health outcomes, so that's one thing. And one other thing, if I can just mention it, is trust. We know that we have not done a great job of ensuring the trust of the public, especially those populations who have been marginalized. And therefore, we cannot marshal any trust when it comes to making predictions, when it comes to making recommendations regarding things such as a vaccine, which we know are in best people's interest. So we are going to have to move forward into ensuring people's trust, remedying grievances from years past, and ensuring that people know, our patients know, that we care for them.
And Dr. Helen Boucher, last word, 30 seconds or so to you. What's bringing you hope as we prepare to enter 2021?
Well, Tiziana, I am hopeful that all of us will find it inside of ourselves to do the hard work we need to do to get us through these next 8 to 12 weeks, to give the gift of having a small holiday with just our immediate family with whom we usually live, wearing a mask, maintaining distance, avoiding crowds, not going to work or school when we're sick, so that we can not overwhelm the healthcare system and provide the time that's needed to get more people vaccinated so we can get to that light, which is coming. And I think we as healthcare people can promise that we'll continue to speak clearly, consistently, and truthfully as often as is helpful.
All right, that is Dr. Helen Boucher of Tufts Medical Center, Dr. Cassandra Pierre of the Boston Medical Center, and WBUR Common Health Editor Carrie Goldberg. Thanks to all three of you for joining me today.
Welcome. Thank you.
Happy holidays.
Thanks. And that's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Tiziana Deering. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.